Here we are in Duluth, Minnesota at Duluth Creative Company. Today's special guest is Sam Nelson. Very dear soul. She is my therapist, and she is a new author of a book that was released a few weeks ago.
Yep.
And it is 10 Things You May Need to Hear Today. So I'd love to welcome you in, Sam, and I'd love for you to tell us about yourself from personally to professionally to the development of your writing skills. I've been honored to watch them progress over the years and now watch it turn into a book and turn into Neurodivergent, Not Broken. So welcome in.
Thank you for having me here. So I am a hairstylist, hence the therapist. I've done that for almost 20 years, which is scary to say. Like, we're closer to 20 than not now. I'm like, oh boy. So that's been my main career. I have a wonderful husband, two great kiddos, and I've always loved working with people. And this is something I realized last year was like, hair is super fun. Hair is super cool. But I was like, but I could not do this in silence without the people and without the stories and without the like getting to know people and seeing where they're at and what's changed since last time I saw them and like how they actually are. And I was like, no, I was like, I could actually, as much as I love hair, I could do without the hair, but I couldn't do without the people. Hmm. And my own journey of figuring out that I was ADHD in my early 30s, and then my husband, and then my kids, and then realizing my husband's autistic and my daughter is, that really took my hyper-focus skills.
Yes.
My like, okay, we're going to learn everything about this now. And I just dove in wanting to understand myself better, wanting to understand my husband better, wanting to understand my kids better. So the past couple years has just been like a lot of my free time is reading books about that, is listening to, you know, other people talk about their experiences. And that ended up really changing my life. And something that came up last year when I had some really hard things happening in my life and I was talking about them with the safe people is you're like, oh, I'm not the only one who's gone through something like this, or I'm not the only one who's felt like this. And like the more I talked about it, the less hard it was and the less alone I felt. And really realizing like, oh, there's so many other things we could be talking about too that people really feel isolated and alone and have never heard anyone else like verbalize before. Like, oh, wait, you experienced that too? So that really kind of empowered me to keep talking about things and my own struggles and what I was learning in my own life at home. And it became a point of conversation with clients daily. Of they were like, hey, you were diagnosed ADHD, right? Like, I'm really curious about X, Y, or Z, or my kid just got diagnosed. So last year I was like, I'm going to start this thing called Neurodivergent, Not Broken. I have no idea what that means. I have no idea what that looks like. I just know that I'm talking about this all the time. And that started as a podcast and then turned into me writing on Substack. and then turned into the book.
Brilliant. And something we've shared along the way is the power of trusting yourself. And I know in your book somewhere, one of the pages, I've been opening it at random, and it always seems to fulfill the advice, or the small little bit can really help pivot my day. And it was something on the lines of, the hardest thing I've ever learned to do is trust myself. And I've been able to watch you evolve while you're trusting yourself as a friend, as just an ally in this life, and to watch that in you, like the settling of like Sam, and to watch you like run with it has been one of the most beautiful things I've witnessed. And your process there was not easy, but when you got there, all of a sudden I was like, clunk, clunk.
It clicked in.
Here she is.
Yep.
Woohoo!
That was that.
Yeah. And so however much you feel open to share, will you kind of tell us about the process of trusting self, and how when we come home to self and the state of empowerment that goes along with it, so much so that you wrote a book not too many months after the click, click. So the power of sinking in, but also what the ripple can cause in other people's lives.
Yeah. I like to start at the beginning of like when we are young and we are told by the adults around us, the caregivers, the parents, the teachers, whoever that is, when we're experiencing something and they're like, you're fine. It's not that bad. You're okay. Like, you're not really hungry. You really don't have to go to the bathroom. Like, they're constantly overriding our own signals, our own knowing of ourselves, our own emotional states, right? Just because, you know, we might be experiencing something that is uncomfortable for them to witness, and they don't want to feel discomfort, they need to shut it down. So then we start to override our own selves of like, oh, that might not be good if I express this, because there might be real consequences to someone expressing themselves, especially depending on who you are, right? In this world of all these different identities, and some people are much more vulnerable to harm than others, right? Depending on where you live and the color of your skin and the language you speak, culturally, there can be a lot of differences there too. So we learn really, really early from all the people around us that like, oh, maybe I'm wrong. Oh, they said I shouldn't feel this way, so maybe I don't. Oh, they said I shouldn't need this, so maybe I don't. And we start to outsource our own knowing, our own understanding to everybody else, to everything else around us. And part of that is being disconnected with our own bodies, right? Like not having that strong connection when we feel just like basic things of like, I'm hungry. Oh, I should eat. Like, we learn to override even the simplest things, and truly start believing that everyone else outside of us knows more than we know, especially about our own selves, right? The analogy I use with this is like, I'm not claiming to like be an expert in trains. Like, that's not the kind of like knowing we're talking about. Like, if I need to know about trains, I'm going to go to the train people. But like, I'm talking about my own self, right? And like, I cannot be an expert in your internal experience, just like you can't be an expert in mine. Like, there is only one person that has access to that, and that's ourselves. And a lot of us really don't know any different. And we think we need to keep proving all of these points and getting the person with the degree to tell us that we're right, that what we're experiencing is really what we're experiencing. And in my own life, like, that was really working through imposter syndrome, mm-hmm. of being like, okay, who am I to talk about these things? I don't have a degree. I didn't go to school for this. Mm-hmm. Right? Like, and slowly working through the, like, it's a different kind of knowing. Right? Like, there isn't a degree for this. It's just through living life. Mm-hmm. It's all the things that I've noticed over the last 20 years of, like, working with people, that I had to stop thinking, like, okay, well, I need to have X, Y, and Z letters after my name to be legitimate. And that's really when it shifted for me, was like, oh, I don't need someone else to tell me that what I have learned through living life is legitimate. I need to believe that what I've learned is legitimate. And I'm not claiming to know anything that I don't know. I'm not claiming to be an expert in trains. Not my thing. That's okay. But, like, I know what I've seen. I know what I've experienced. I know I can see the patterns now. And I think a lot of neurodivergent people can relate to that feeling of being cut off from their own selves. And we're just living to keep everyone else comfortable and happy. And it can feel really scary to trust yourself. Mm-hmm. And sometimes we don't even know how, because mm-hmm. it's been so long. Mm-hmm. But I started noticing even the little things that I was like, I don't know, I don't really have a reason why I did this thing. I just felt like it was the right thing for me to do. Maybe it's not the right thing for you to do, mm-hmm. but it was the right thing for me to do at that time. And every single time I, like, proved myself right. Even though I had no explanation, I hadn't, like, but looking back, I was like, oh, I knew that going on Substack was the right place for me. I don't know why. So I just started, I was putting together all these pieces of, wait a minute, there's a pattern that every time I do the thing that it feels most aligned with myself, even if I have no logical explanation, it always is the right thing for me mm-hmm. at that time.
Mm-hmm. And the power of understanding the intelligence within. So, like, our lived experience, we all have a lived experience in our body. And as I hear you say, there's nobody else on earth living this life for us. So there's a lot of people that may tell you shoulds, hows, all the things about how to live your life. As a advocate for people's quality of life myself, I see this a lot of people seeking externally to fulfill internally. And when I get to ask them, like, well, how does this feel in your body? And their eyes go really big, like, wait, what?
Feel my body? What do you mean?
Yeah. Because we've learned to live so far out of ourselves.
Because it hasn't been safe.
No. Mm-hmm. Yes. Mm-hmm. And it's not taught. So we're, mm-hmm. since we're very young, like you mentioned, we're, specifically, I feel, as I travel the world, I can see it's a very Americanized thing mm-hmm. in the overriding of self. And that's why I feel a part of why our culture feels so exhausted is because we're overriding ourselves so much that our even the simplest of needs, as in drinking water, yes. Having some greens in your lunch, getting a good quality night's sleep with minimal screen intake. I mean, those are just three of that came to the top of my head. But when we do listen to our inner self and do trust the nuances and the sensations that it's telling us, it can literally pivot the trajectory of our whole life, because that's where our truth lies. That's where our the soulship for this journey in this body lies. And I think there's such power in feeling safe enough in your body to be able to trust it, be able to listen to it, be able to tend to it. And I want to carry our conversation on in how we can help others go there with themselves to begin or maybe continue on the journey of settling into self. And I always believe that being aware and acceptance are where we begin this, in presence, in like, oh, there's that cue again. What is that trying to tell me? Oh, wait, is my mind overriding my body's cues, or, okay, which one do I go with? Mm-hmm. And it's a practice. It's every day I'm still learning to trust myself, to listen within, not externally as much. But I also know that the bombardation and stimulation of our culture takes away a lot of our inter dialogue of real life things that can really shape the quality of the rest of our lives. So what do you foresee as you began to trust? What are some practices that moving forward that you do daily now or weekly?
The first thing that comes to mind, and this is with yourself and this is with other people too, of like not denying someone else's experience, mm-hmm. and also not denying your own experience, because a lot of times that is the default. Mm-hmm. And not trying to change, like specifically when it comes to like my husband, right? Like I had to do a lot of practice and work with this of like, once we realized when he was really dysregulated and having a meltdown, right? Like I wanted it to stop, mm-hmm. because it can be uncomfortable to be around. It can be uncomfortable to like witness someone else in distress, and like you just want to make it stop, right? And also our bodies have this like natural arc as they go through these things, and my take on that is like, offer support in any way you can offer support, but you don't get to deny someone else going through that process, because then you shut it down. It doesn't finish. That's still like held in there. Especially if no one is being harmed, if no one is being hurt, like learning how to, like it started with realizing I was activated being around that, and talking with my therapist and her being like, you can walk away. It's okay. So first it was, okay, if this is happening, I can go somewhere else. It's okay. It was a very slow journey of like building my tolerance. Tolerance isn't even the right word. Capacity to being present with someone else, to allow them to have their own experience and to not let my discomfort try to override what they are feeling. To getting to a point where, you know, I it's not to say that any of this is easy. This has taken time and a lot of intention. But I can sit with my daughter now while she has a meltdown. It's not fun, but I can sit there with her and not stop it. You know, I can support her in any way that I can, but I don't get to deny her having that experience. I don't get to deny my husband having that experience. So the more I allowed them to be more of who they are and not have to make me comfortable, the easier it is to kind of sit with your own stuff and be honest about your own stuff. And instead of, you know, when someone asks you like, oh, how are you today? Instead of being like, oh, I'm great. Act, you know, like being like, you know what? Today's a hard day. Like, let's stop lying about how we really are. And we're so conditioned to do that. So just being honest with ourselves, like, this is really shitty right now. This really sucks. And there's a whole lot of toxic positivity about, oh, but this and that. And it's like, what I've noticed is like, that never helps anyone actually feel seen. And I'm like, I can sit with you and be like, this, yeah, this sucks. Because me denying it and saying, no, what's going to be great because of X, Y, and Z never helps anybody. So not denying other people's experiences, not denying your own experiences. But yeah, it's a practice, baby steps, because a lot of us are not used to that. And again, for a lot of people, it's not safe to even express those things, right? Depending on who you were around. Like, it could be dangerous to have those things happen. So now, like, because I've been able to build that capacity, my husband has been able to allow himself to feel through all of this more openly. Because, like, either way, he's having the meltdown. Whether I see it or not, he's having it. And because the space is safe now, there's no judgment, there's no shame, there's no trying to stop it. Like, he can be on the floor, tears, snot, shaking, and allow himself to do that next to me and know that he's safe, that he's not being judged, he's not being shamed. Like, by me doing my work, it gives other people permission to experience their own things, their own feelings. So yeah, not overriding what's true for other people. It's just not fair. Because, like, we would never want someone else to be like, well, that's not how you really feel, or you shouldn't feel that way. It's like, but I do. So first we just have to be honest about it.
Like, let go of pretension, step more into realness of the human experience, because we all have an array of lived experience and we're all from the same species. We're all go through similar.
There's always ways we can, like, relate, right? Like, it may not be the same exact experience, but I can be like, ooh, I think I felt something similar to that, right? Like, I can relate in one way or another. And people are really good at, even when they have something they can, like, relate to, they still want to deny someone else.
Exactly.
Which is, again, it's just not fair. And it is harmful in the way that, like, philosophy would call it epistemic injustice of, like, who gets to decide who knows what and who is legitimate. And that was a really powerful shift for me in learning that, like, oh, I knew this was a thing, but there's actually, like, a study. There's a word for this. And thinking, like, how many people have felt this. Again, parents, caregivers, doctors, like, telling people, like, that's not, I don't really believe you. I don't think that's really what you're experiencing. Like, it's just, it's the default. We do not believe people when they tell us. And again, there's a lot of people that they just stop telling people because they have not been believed. And then they don't believe themselves.
Yeah. And stepping into the container of safety, the safetiness to be thyself, and how I get to see it a lot when the person sinks into trusting who they are, or even going beyond trusting and falling in love. And it's not of an ego stance. It's not of a hierarchical. It's literally like they look in the mirror one day and they're like, wow, like we've made it this far. We've done this. We've overcome that. We're still working on this. Like they can get very real with who they are and who they're becoming. And I feel the more I mature, the more I get to gain age, I feel more and more that creating safe spots, specifically here in Duluth, we get to do this. What a potency there is to creating a space that not everybody who comes in may feel safe, because that's their own internal experience, of course. Mm-hmm. And doing our utmost with what we know, what we have, how we be, to allow the person that is coming in to be seen for who they are and meet them where they're at. And what can unravel from there. So we get to see it in different ways. But we also have shared our stories and how they do relate very clearly. And when someone gets to tell you something about themselves that maybe they don't feel safe telling to any other person,
yep,
both as a therapist and a massage and yoga therapist, we get to see it in different ways. And soon as you watch that level of safety be gained and the sharing begin on a vulnerable, real level, and the pretension has gone away. And you can literally watch them go off of your chair, and they might look 20 pounds energetic lighter.
Mm-hmm.
I can say mm-hmm. for myself that happens as well. It's like, oh, okay, interesting. I have never told that to anybody.
Yeah.
It's like, oh, okay, it's safe with me. I'm glad you could get it shared in the universe. And... you know, it's like a massive let go.
I think it's really underrated.
Yes.
I don't think people realize how big it is until they have that experience.
Yeah.
And, you know, first you have to have that container of safety, you know, someone, another human that you feel safe enough to be vulnerable with. And like, even if they don't actually really need to do anything, they just need to like... hold that safety and, right, like just allow you to be who and what you are.
Mm-hmm.
And the power of just like speaking some of those things out loud for people is like, again, oh, I've never said that to anybody before. Oh, my God.
Mm-hmm.
I didn't know that was a weight I was carrying until I like, right? Yes. I had a really cool experience with someone, you know, like in relationship to all of this, who I met with not too long ago, who was really concerned about what some of the professionals in their life were recommending them to do.
Hmm.
And they were curious in my opinion. And, you know, I was like, well, based off of everything you're telling me, it sounds like you know the answer.
Hmm.
I was like, you know, trust yourself. And the look on their face, they had never heard that before.
Mm-mm.
And they were just like, wait, that's an option?
Mm-hmm.
And this isn't to say that, like, that's some magical thing that, like, you say it and then it's there. Mm-hmm. But it's like, oh, wait. Maybe I can even just a little bit. Maybe I can trust myself even a little bit that, like, I know that this thing isn't right for me right now because of X, Y, and Z. And they sent me a message later being like, I don't know what happened, but that was super cool. And so often when you get into other spaces that are based off of hierarchy, and this is why I think, like, the work you and I do with people is very different and very important, mm-hmm. is there is no patient provider dynamic, mm-hmm. right? Like, we are peers with our people, mm-hmm. right? Like, yes, I can do hair. Yes. You can do massage. Like, we have those specialties, but, like, as soon as you have that difference in the power dynamic, mm-hmm. that can change the whole thing, as where somebody would never be told that, I don't think. With someone with more power than them. Mm. And I think it's very rare. Which reminds me of the actual need for these peer dynamics, mm. of reminding each other these things. Because sometimes it just hits different. It hits different. And people feel more safe, like, walking in the door, whether it's with you or with me. Like, there's already this, like, less anxiety for people than, like, walking into a doctor's office, walking into a therapist's office. Like, we need doctors. We need therapists.
Yeah.
We need everybody.
Yep.
But it's just different, what can happen in different settings. Mm-hmm. And the ripple effect from that. Like, when I got to meet with this person, you know, a month after that, and they were like, so much has changed in my life. And it's not to say it's any one specific moment, right? It's everything combined. Nothing is happening in a vacuum. But it was really cool to see that ripple effect of, like, I believe that you know. Mm-hmm. I don't need to know what's best for you, but I believe that you know. Mm-hmm. And you're still concerned about pleasing the system and pleasing everybody else and overriding yourself to, like, do the right thing. Mm-hmm. And not the thing that actually you have capacity for or would be helpful for you right now. Like, maybe this thing actually would not help you. Mm-mm. Maybe it would a little bit, but maybe it wouldn't in this moment. Maybe another time. That ripple effect was just, it was super cool. And I ended up writing something about it and came up with this word called co-trusting. Mm-hmm. Which is like, I believe that you know. Mm-hmm. And, like, lending your trust in someone else to themselves. Mm-hmm. Like, because most people have never had someone be like, I know that you know. Mm-hmm. Like, if we're not trying to please everybody else. Mm-hmm. And so often that, you know, we get called selfish and all the things, mm-hmm. to try to get us to conform to that. That was, yeah, it was a really, really cool experience with that person and what came from that and my reflection on that and coming up with the word that I was like, I don't know if this is a thing, but it is now. Mm-hmm.
That's amazing. And it's like we've discussed this before. It's like sharing our light. And I think one of the last times we were together, we literally like, my light has helped light your light. Your light has helped my light.
We did.
And it's the same thing in trusting. It's like we've settled into ourselves so well that we trust self here. And we can, of course, we're humans. Of course, we have things happen and all of the human things that come forth. But day to day, week to week, month to month, year to year, we are settled.
Mm-hmm.
And so when we can live through example through day to day of like being a solid, steady foundation of a person, we then can offer that. Maybe it's by example, maybe it's by word, maybe it's by however we get to share that. But it reminds me a lot of the same in the light. So like trusting self. And the more people that get to trust themselves, the more our future will glow. Like,
yeah,
I've always thought about that keeping up with the Joneses thing. And it's like, okay, has anybody checked if the Joneses are happy? Has anybody checked if they're contented? Has anybody checked if they're cool? How are they doing?
Look okay?
Yeah. Their fence, their siding, their front door. Okay, what's happening inside the Joneses? And so it's something that I've always fallen back on in a lot of my studies, because I feel the more we live outside of our truth or in a space of pretension, the more it's harder to trust self, to be self, to express self. And it's because we're looking at someone else's life. And so, not that we shouldn't be involved in other people's lives and engaged in it. That's not the point. The point is the comparative manner and the competitive manner. And letting that fall in honoring your life the way it is and what you're bringing forth to this brilliant miracle called life. So just being brave enough, we've become brave enough in ourselves to know that we've got this, whether it's writing a book, whether it's cutting someone's hair, whether mm-hmm. it's helping someone through a really hard time, whether it's being real with ourselves to allow the tears to come down, to go out and skip and be jolly, to whatever it is that the day has in store. Just being brave enough to be who you're created to be. Because there's no two people on earth, even twins. Twins have different experiences in life, yeah. In how they participate, how they, all the things.
Mm-hmm.
So in this season, I really, really am trying to bring it back to the basics of life. And I do believe this is a massive part of it. It's the foundation of self, the foundation of being safe enough in yourself, in your home, in your community, to then go and express yourself and share your creations and go be a part of something greater than you, all the while knowing that you're thick as thieves with self. And the power that can establish over time. I mean, we're in our 30s, and so we still got, hopefully, decades ahead. And we are blessed to be here in this time. Again, not comparative or competitive. It's, I know as myself, I'm just grateful to befriend myself this early on in life. So then I make discernment and decisions out of the greatest, wisest part of me for my present self and future self, taking from my past self and all the research I've gone through and applying it to here and forward. And so to kind of wrap it up, just going in on the bravery, the brave, it is bravery. Mm-hmm. Like, because there's a lot of comparative things. There's the reels, the scrolling, the this should look like this, this filter can do this. It's like, well, what do you look like underneath it all?
What are you really?
Yeah. Like, how's it going?
Yeah.
And just allowing the masks to fall off and see, like, the beautiful person that each person is. That's one of my gifts is since I was little, I always sought the light in every human. Like, sometimes it's to my demise because, you know, not everybody chooses to live in their light. But still till this day, I'll look at any human and I'll see their light, their spirit, their fortitude, their, like, the essence of creation in them. And so taking a mirror to myself and looking at the same sort of thing allows both of us to go out and advocate for it in all of us.
Yeah, I think, like, the analogy of, you know, we've had other people throughout the way who have been helping us light our own candle, who have been co-trusting with us, right? Like, you know, slowly building that. And then us doing our own work to the point of being like, okay, I have this flame now. I've built this. Now I have enough that I can go and help give that to someone else, right? Like, and it's sometimes it can be just like small little moments, right? I think like a year ago when my friend was like, oh, you could totally write a book. Mm-hmm. And I was like, what? Like, sometimes you don't believe what is possible until someone else is like, yeah, you could do that if you want to. Like, and then we find all the reasons why, like, and this is not the toxic positivity of you can do anything you set your mind to, because that can be problematic, because mm-hmm. that's not real life. But then we start finding all the reasons, like, why we're not worthy to write a book, or why we shouldn't write a book, or how I don't know enough to write a book, or how I don't have the letters after my name, right? And I think a really poignant piece for that, which set this kind of different fire under me, was like the systems that we live in, right? Capitalism, patriarchy, white supremacy, ableism, like all of these systems that are harmful. Mm-hmm. They want us to believe that we are powerless. Mm-hmm. They want us to just conform to fit in. Because if we trusted ourselves and not them, those systems might not exist anymore. Mm-hmm. Right? Like, so for me, it was like, oh, wait a minute. This is actually like a really kind of fun act of rebellion of me like practicing trusting myself of like, am I doing this because someone else or something else is expecting this of me? Or am I doing this because, again, nuanced conversation, always my disclaimer. Am I doing this because it's what's good for me right now? Like, and this is not in a selfish way. Who is this for? Is this for me and my well-being? Or is this to make someone else more comfortable or make the system work? Mm-hmm. Like, then it kind of became a little more fun of being like, wait a minute. Every time I trust myself more, like, that system loses a little bit of power. Mm-hmm. And I get a little bit of my own power back.
It's part of the revolution. Yeah.
And then other people, again, sometimes you don't know what's possible until you see someone else do it, until you read about someone else doing it. And you're like, oh, wait. So it doesn't even have to be a direct thing with someone. Mm. but just knowing, man, someone else did this really hard thing. And they, you know, they were vulnerable enough to share about it and talk about it and be honest about it. And I think that's the other really important piece is if we're not vulnerable about these hard things, then we all feel isolated and alone. And like there's something like individually wrong with us. And then, you know, once we have a safe enough space to start to open up and talk about those things, you're like, oh, wait. There are other people that also feel this way. Not that that's what you want, but either way, like there are, that's the reality is there are. But the system relies on us staying quiet and silent and not being honest about how we really are and what's really happening and denying our own experiences and denying other people's experiences.